Welker, you are listening to episode 321 of the podcast, unless you're joining live on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. If you do want to catch the show live, you know what to do. You got to subscribe on one or all of those platforms, preferably, and turn on your notifications so you know when the show is live, like right now. I'm going to try to find the energy to do this, folks. I'm going to try and summon it from somewhere within for you. Today is day 8 of my single parenting chronicles. My wife is still in Atlanta on a business trip. She's coming home tomorrow night, and I'm counting the minutes. I've loved being able to spend so much time with my daughter and bond, but man, it's more exhausting than any training I've done in my 20 something years of mixed martial arts. If you count, you know, going all the way back to wrestling, or even longer, if you count, look, it's more like 31 years. If you count like doing karate as a kid, started out with Japanese jiu-jitsu. But if you put all of that together, all the wrestling practices, all the MMA sparring, all the Muay Thai, the jiu-jitsu, all of it, not as tiring as keeping up with a 5-year-old, I gotta say. They just, bless her heart, she just doesn't run out of energy. She's asleep now. Hopefully stays that way. I have the door open, so if the show gets interrupted by a child that wakes up, then you know, the parenting responsibility is gonna have to take priority over the show here, as much as I enjoy talking to you folks. But we'll see how it goes. We've had some fun. We've done a lot of swimming, done a lot of crafts, a lot of painting, played some Barbies, went and worked out at the gym together. We had a good time, but definitely looking forward to mom being home. It's just, you know, you really learn to appreciate the little things. Like somebody else taking care of the laundry, or maybe like picking up some toys, or, you know, taking care of the dishes that are in the sink. Like, those little things really add up when you're doing it on your own. So definitely so much respect. Here's a toast to all the single parents out there. I don't know how y'all are doing it. I actually broke down and hired a babysitter last week, just so I could go to the gym. You know, I probably could have taken her with me and she would have been fine, but, you know, I wanted her to get a little interaction with someone other than me. We had a nice little MMA card this weekend. I know I was kind of shitting on it last week, or starting to, trying not to. I really just avoided talking about it because I didn't want to shit on it. And it turned out to be a great card. So if you guys, you know, decided not to watch it based on me, or, you know, just based on reading the card, how it looked on paper, I'll go over a little bit what you might want to go back and catch up on, or I'll just fill you in so you don't have to. I'll be your MMA Cliff Notes this week. But I have to lead with BKFC. Not just because it came first chronologically, it happened on Friday night in Lakeland, but because I had some buddies fighting on the card and they all did well. First and foremost, my man Dave Redneck Mundell defending his middleweight title in the main event against Mike the Marine Richmond. And it was a great fight. Dave got dropped in the first round. And then, you know, came back and turned it on. Seeing him get dropped is not something that happens often. But he came back hard against Richmond, who's a tough dude. He came down from light heavyweight for this fight, which Dave also fights at light heavyweight, so it's not a big deal in that regard. But, you know, Richmond was fucking people up at that weight class. I think he only lost once, and then he dropped down. I'll pull his record up here. Yeah.
Oh no, he hadn't lost. He was 5-0 going into this fight. So yeah. And he's ranked number one in middleweight and light heavyweight. So Dave was able to knock him out, I think, in the third, I want to say. I don't have it right here in front of me. I was so excited watching this and, like, kind of nervous. I lost track. I wish I could have gone. You know, the fights were only in Lakeland, which is, like, an hour away from where I live. But I had the kiddo solo, and I think you know, bringing a five-year-old to a bare-knuckle boxing event would not be the most appropriate thing. So I had to I had to watch it from home, but it was a good card. Proud of my man, Dave. He retained his title. And he looked good doing it, man. He knocked out Richmond, who's a really tough guy. And now Dave is 7-1 in BKFC. His only loss was a controversial decision loss to Hector Lombard, which, you know, there was a lot of shitty circumstances surrounding that fight. Not to make excuses for him, but Lombard kept increasing the weight, wasn't going to make weight. And, yeah, I don't agree with the decision. A lot of people didn't agree with the decision, but it went the way it went. And that's that. So now Dave has been calling out Mike Perry. He wants to beat him up. They have a history. They've trained together. They fought amateur MMA against each other way back in the day. So that's the fight that makes sense. It seems like Mike Perry isn't even interested in fighting for the title. He wants to do these, like, one-off fights with guys who have never done bare knuckle before, like Luke Rockhold and like whoever else they line up for him, Vanderlei Silva probably at some point. But yeah, I mean, everybody keeps saying that Mike Perry is built for bare knuckle boxing, but he won't get in there with a guy who is actually the best at it, and that's Dave Mundell. So until that happens, I don't think anybody should be saying that Mike Perry's built for bare knuckle boxing, because he doesn't want to even face the guy who's the best. Let's see. Another one of my buddies, Brandon Allen, with an awesome fight. It went pretty similar to Dave's fight. He got knocked down in the first round, which does not happen often for him, if ever. I don't know if he's ever been knocked down. Let's take a quick look at his record. He's 3-1 in BKFC now at featherweight. He was in there with Seth Schaefer, who was 3-0 coming into this fight. So Brandon gets knocked down at the end of the first round and then comes out like a man on fire, knocks out Schaefer with his signature left hook that he's used to knock out opponents with before. I've trained with Brandon before. I've been punched by Brandon before. And I can tell you from experience, it's not fun. I don't think he unloaded on me the way he did on Schaefer, or even close to it. But I can tell you the man can crack. So when he put Schaefer out cold, I was not surprised. And then my buddy Ryan Reber, 4-0 in BKFC now, getting a big win. And what was weird about this fight against Travis Thompson, who was 5-4 in BKFC going into this fight, so he had a lot of experience. What was weird about this fight is after the five rounds, it was a split draw. Apparently, in bare knuckle boxing, they just make up their own rules as they go. If it's a draw, so two judges scored a draw, and I think the third judge had it for Thompson. So a split draw, apparently when that happens, they're allowed to fight one more round, which I don't know how this gets sanctioned by any athletic commission. I don't know if the fighters knew about this beforehand. I don't know if the fans knew about it beforehand. I don't know if the referee knew about it beforehand. I've never seen anything like this before. I don't know if it's been done in BKFC before. Granted, I could just text the source in Ryan, but what's the fun in that? I could just speculate about it on the internet. I will find out from him. I will get an answer for you guys. So split draw at the end of five rounds, they box one more round. And first of all, I think the decision was bullshit. I think Ryan was completely winning the fight. I don't know where the draw came from. You know, it was kind of back and forth, and Ryan was backing up for most of the fight, but I feel like he was counter-striking well. He was landing a lot more. Thompson was swinging and missing a lot. In any case, Ryan Reber came out like a man possessed in that sixth round and just turned it up and busted Thompson's face open, left him a bloody mess. And then he cracked a beer or an energy drink or something and sprayed it all over himself and all over the ring because he was so excited to win that decision. So big congratulations to him. I've also been punched by Ryan Reber. Also not fun. And I was just so happy to see these guys have success that, you know, I've been friends with and I've trained with for many years. Dave the longest. But yeah, I'm happy for the other guys as well. So congrats. Cheers to those guys. You gotta be crazy to do this bare knuckle boxing stuff, man. I mean, it's nuts. Even if you win, like, you're probably leaving with a broken hand or and some cuts, like scar tissue. But, you know, these guys are bad motherfuckers, so they get in there and do it. My buddy J.R. Ridge fighting for the flyweight title next month. He's going to be the main event against John Dodson out in Albuquerque. So I'll keep you guys posted on how that goes. I've seen parts of his training camp. He's looking shredded as I've ever seen him. And he's looking good. He looks in great shape, and he's ready to go. All right, let's talk about UFC because – this card, I know I kind of told you guys, like, it's not worth watching, especially coming off of the great pay-per-view we just had. But this was a nice little card we had. The main event, the main card was almost all finishes. So let's start with the main event. Myra Bueno Silva getting the submission win over Holly Holm. Which is a huge deal for her. She did it with a modified guillotine, which is basically like a front choke with a rear naked choke grip. So I imagine Myra has some pretty long arms. This is not a submission that I could ever pull off because I was not gifted with long arms. Give me an arm in guillotine every day of the week. And I'll have a lot more success with that. I could show you, if you have long arms, I could show you how to do the modified guillotine, but I could not do it to you. And yeah, this is the point I was getting to. Thanks, Mark, for joining the show. Does Holly Holm earn a title shot with that loss? It would seem so. it's just become a running joke in the MMA community that anytime Holly Holm does anything, she gets a title shot. Man, it wouldn't surprise me at all. This title's vacant right now. I mean, it actually surprised me that they didn't throw her in there for the vacant title. It seems like they just give stuff to Holly Holm. I think she's 8-7 in the UFC. Something like that. I think, man. And I know that's not going to be her legacy. Her legacy is going to be knocking out Ronda Rousey and, you know, being the champ, fighting for a second title at 145, which, by the way, I did my due diligence, folks, and I pulled up the rankings before I started the podcast. Imagine that. I actually did a little bit of work, and I noticed, those of you watching on YouTube or Facebook can see this here on the screen, there's no women's flyweight division in the rankings. There's women's bantamweight. The champion picture is just blank. They couldn't even put like some signage that said vacant or something. And here we have the bantamweight rankings, Juliana Pena, Raquel Pennington, Holly Holm. Obviously that's going to change by Tuesday. And the featherweight division is just gone, because if you guys remember, I pulled this up a few weeks ago, and all it was a picture of Amanda Nunes with the belt. So I guess when she retired, the UFC was just like, let's just pretend this never happened. It's going to be so weird. Like, if people become fans of the UFC, like, tomorrow and start following the sport, they're going to see Amanda Nunes get inducted to the Hall of Fame in a few years. And they're going to talk about how she was a 135 and 145 division champion. And if they just started following the sport tomorrow, they're going to be like, wait a second, there was a 145 pound division. What happened to it? Well, it retired with Amanda Nunes. And this was kind of the question I posed to you guys a few weeks ago. Do you think the UFC will announce that the featherweight division is gone, which they didn't? Or do you think they'll just kind of, you know, let it die? It seems to be, we have the answer, folks. It was the latter. They just, I don't know, they just let it out to pasture. If anybody asks the UFC, like, what happened to the featherweight division? Oh, it moved to the farm. You know, just like you tell your kids when the dog passes away. We had to move that featherweight division to the farm, kids. It's gone. So, Myra Bueno Silva is going to leapfrog to the top of this division. I imagine she's going to take Holly Holm's spot at number three come Tuesday. So what do we do with her? I think it's a given that Juliana Pena and Raquel Pennington are going to fight for the vacant title. It makes sense to put Myra in there with Ketlin Vieira or even Irene Aldana. You know, give Aldana a chance to redeem herself after getting blasted by Amanda Nunes. So, yeah, that's that. And Holly Holm, man, I don't know what we do with Holly Holm. Probably give her the winner of Raquel Pennington. And so before this, yeah, Holly Holm has always been hot and cold. I'm not going to say anything else. I have a lot of respect for Holly Holm, so I don't want to go down this rabbit hole right now. But she's 41 years old, and coming off a loss, lost two of her last three. So it's probably a title shot right around the river bend. Co-main event. What did you guys think about this fight? If you saw it, if you didn't, it was a great fight. Jack Della Maddalena against the newcomer Basil Hafez. It was a split decision win for Jack Della Maddalena. I think anyone who watched this fight would be surprised that he got his hand raised. I think Basil probably won the first two rounds. You could argue that the third round, however, was a 10-8 for Jack Della Maddalena. Hafez was able to take Jack down for the first two rounds and hold him down, and he expended a lot of energy doing so. And was really tired in that third round, and Della Maddalena was able to piece him up. Definitely won that third round. Some people scored the second round for Della Maddalena. You know, he started picking up steam towards the end of the round, but man, I don't know if he did enough. It was a split decision, so one judge did give it to Basil, which, you know, it, credit to him, taking on a guy like Della Maddalena in his UFC debut, no easy task. He showed that he can hang with the big dogs. For Della Maddalena, you know, he was supposed to fight Sean Brady, I believe, in this spot. And some people might say, like, well, the way he got handled by the newcomer might show he's not ready for the top dogs. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think, you know, he took a last-minute opponent, somebody he didn't really know about, and got in there. And Chael Sonnen always says the thing that can be detrimental to a fighter is when the fight is going to be harder than you anticipated it to be. And that will break a lot of guys. It really will. I can tell you, it happens even just like rolling jiu-jitsu. You know, you think like, oh, this guy is not going to pose any problems for me. And then all of a sudden you get swept one time and it starts creeping in your head like, oh shit, I thought this guy was trash. And now here I am on the bottom and I got to work my way out of it. It affects you mentally. So the fact that he was able to lose the first round and a half ish or so and still come back and win that third round, I think says more than the fact that he got taken down a few times in the first two rounds. I think it says more that he was able to overcome that. You know, because a guy, especially a guy, this is what I wanted to see from a guy like Madalena, because, you know, he smashes everybody in the first round. Now we saw, you know, the guy's got a dog in him. He can take a licking and keep on kicking. You know what I mean? And that kind of is more telling to his future as a fighter than if he would have gone out there and just knocked this guy out in the first round, or if he, you know, would have gotten dominated in the first round, round and a half, and then kind of given up. But the fact that he was able to come back and then squeak by with this decision win, I think it says a lot of good things about this young man's future. Let's see. Then we had the 21-year-old Francisco Prado. TKO over Otman Azaitar. Azaitar, who only has one loss on his record from, you guessed it, the steamroller Matt Provola, who knocked him out, I don't know, a year ago? Probably less. 8 months? I don't know. Not like you can just look it up, Bill. let's say it was 8 months ago. So Prado hit Azaitar with a nasty elbow on the feet, sliced his head open, and then just hammer-fisted the shit out of him until Mark Smith had to jump in there. I'm sorry, Chris Tognoni had to jump in there and separate these two. It's kind of scary that these kids are coming in 21 years old and just beating the piss out of people. That's troubling. You know, when I started watching this sport, or like really following this sport closely, Randy Couture was one of the best fighters in the world, and he fought till he was 47. You know, what are we supposed to do with these 21-year-old kids now? I just told you guys at the beginning of the show, I can't keep up with a 5-year-old. What are we going to do with a 21-year-old that could slice my face wide open with an elbow? Nothing. That's why I'm sitting here talking about fighting instead of going out there and doing it. Jin Young Park looked phenomenal. This guy's a problem at middleweight, I'm telling you guys now. Submission win over Albert Duraev, but the submission was not the story of the fight. The story of the fight was Park's jab. He was really controlling the distance well. He was dominating this entire fight until Duraev just kind of broke at the end of the second round, and he was able to jump on top, grab a rear naked choke. But Jin Young Park is definitely a problem in this middleweight division. I'm excited to see where he's going to go from here. Let's see. He's got only one loss. Oh no, two losses in the UFC. Four, five, six, seven, and two in the UFC. Last three wins by rear naked choke. Exciting dude. I'm looking forward to seeing his next fight. All right, here was the most memeable moment of the fight card. If you guys don't watch anything else, go back and watch like the first minute of Norma Dumont versus Chelsea Handler. So they were kind of throwing back and forth. Maybe it was like 30 seconds into the fight. They were throwing back and forth. Dumont was backing up and throwing some nice counter punches. She catches Chelsea Handler with a clean shot, and Chelsea Handler turns around and does a full sprint to the other side of the cage. And Dumont just runs after her. I've never seen anything like this in all my years watching MMA. I think, like, you can make an argument that the fight should have been stopped right there. You know, if you completely turn your back to your opponent and dart towards the other side of the cage, I think maybe like it would be justified if the referee said, all right, I think we're done here. You know, I don't think that would be unfair to either fighter. But Dumont ran her down and then ran her way to a unanimous decision, one-sided victory. I made about 12 memes based on the screenshot. You can catch those on Instagram at MMA on the Rocks. I only posted like 4 or 5 of them, but I just found it so funny. Just the image of two women in a fight and one of them has her back completely turned and just darts it across, like she was an Olympic sprinter. Like she, I would love to see somebody post like her sprinting time, like from post to post in the cage. It would probably be like 0.034 seconds. It was hysterical. If you only go back and watch one thing, go back and watch that. If you go back and watch two things, go back and watch Nazim Sadikov submit Terrence McKinney. What a fight this was. Performance of the night, I believe, for Nazim Sadikov, who comes out of the Longo Weidman fight camp on Long Island, got redemption for his teammate, Matt the Steamroller Frivola, who got, unfortunately, KO'd by Terrence McKinney in Terrence's UFC debut. Now, when you think Terrence McKinney, you think explosive power puncher. But Terrence in the first round came out actually with a pretty solid game plan and took Nazim down. I don't think anybody saw this coming, including Nazim. I think he was really thrown off. He thought he was going to have to weather the storm in that first round, which he did. But it was not the storm he was anticipating. So he got held down for most of the first round, came out swinging in the second round. There was a bit of a grappling scramble, and then Nazim got on top. He actually took McKinney's back and had his arm pinned behind his back, kind of like a Dagestani handcuff back take, and then got the rear naked choke in there. It looked like Terrence's arm was injured in the process because it was pinned to his back while Nazim put the choke in. And I don't know if he was tapping to his shoulder getting ripped out or to the choke. But he looked like he was in some pain when this was done. Nazim Sadikov is a problem, man. This guy is good. He's good. He's going to stand out real fast in a division that is so stacked with talent. The fact that he was able to do that to a guy like Terrence McKinney is super impressive, because Terrence, even though he's had a rough go of it lately, that guy is a talent. There's no denying that. Super impressive there by Nazim Sadikov. It was the most impressive performance on the card for me. I know I told you guys, if you only watch one thing, watch the Norma Dumont, because that's just funny. But if you want my recommendation for like the best fight of the card, it was this one. It was Nazim and Terrence. I did watch the rest of the card, but the girl in the first fight, Aylin Perez, unanimous decision win over Ashley Evans-Smith, and then she did like some weird twerking thing that was just very uncomfortable for everybody, including the referee, Chris Tognoni. Is there anything else I really want to talk about here? Not really. Oh, yes, I do. Sorry. Victoria Dudakova against Estela Nunez. So Dudakova, this 30 seconds into the fight, Dudakova goes for an outside single leg, which I always advise people, you know, when I teach wrestling to jiu-jitsu practitioners and to MMA guys, if they don't have a wrestling background and I'm teaching wrestling, I always say, do not shoot for an outside single. What I mean by that is grabbing a single leg with your head on the outside, Okay. If you're going to shoot a single leg in jiu-jitsu or MMA, you should shoot with your head on the inside. If you're not an experienced wrestler, if your name's not Chris Weidman or Ben Askren, who are the only two guys I can think of, and would be a short list behind them, who have pulled off single legs with their head on the outside consistently in MMA. Oh, Daniel Cormier. If you're not one of those three guys, don't do it. Right. If you're not Gordon Ryan, don't do it. The reason being, it leaves you too vulnerable. Your neck is out there getting ready to snatch, getting ready to be snatched up in a guillotine. And if you shoot too low, you risk your back getting taken. Now, obviously, nobody ever told this to Victoria Dudikova. And conversely, nobody taught Estela Nunez how to defend an outside single or how to attack, how to counterattack an outside single. Because instead of trying to grab the neck of Dudikova, she posts her arm on the mat, which is something you should never do when somebody's trying to take you down. Okay, you should try and keep your hands on the body. You should be working for a wizard. You should be pushing the head down. Your hand should not be going towards the mat. And if you watch this fight, this is the reason why. She posts her arm, and when she lands, her elbow pops right out of place. For those of you who are old school MMA fans, you may remember this happening to Shogun Hua in Pride when he fought Mark Coleman. Of course, Mark Coleman, a beast of a wrestler from Ohio, had an unstoppable takedown at the time. And Shogun, even though he was a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, I guess was not familiar with being taken down. He posts his arm snaps in half. For Nunez, it looked like this was a dislocation and not a break, which would be a best case scenario for her. If they could just kind of pop that bad boy back in and she doesn't have to wait for a bone to fuse, that would be the best case. But it looked nasty. So if you have a weak stomach for this kind of stuff, don't look it up. And if what I'm telling you kind of piques your interest, then, you know, check out the clip. I'm sure there's a lot of highlight clips. You don't have to wait very long into the fight to see what happens. So Dudikova did the wrong thing shooting for an outside single, and Nunez did the wrong thing posting her arm while having that wrong takedown applied on her. So in any case, okay, let me look here. Oh, we got the boys from the Sound of Violence podcast. The Sound of Violence podcast that has, as far as I know, been defunct. Maybe this is a sign it's on the way back. Their YouTube channel is active here. The Sound of Violence, those of you who don't remember, they used to aggregate all the MMA podcasts that took place during the week and kind of give you the cliff notes on them. It was quite convenient, but they haven't been doing the thing for a while. Oh, apparently they're confirming that the podcast is dead AF. So well, RIP to the Sound of Violence podcast, but I'm glad you guys are still active and glad you're here. So you can be part of this community of degenerates. Speaking of which, you may be wondering what this dark accumulation is at the bottom of my glass. Here's my summer whiskey hack for you guys. This is something that I've done for a while. I don't think I've ever talked about it on the podcast. If I have, it's because I was too intoxicated. But, you know, I like to sip whiskey. You guys may or may not know this if you've ever listened to the show. In the summertime, it's hot, especially here in Florida. So you want to put ice in your whiskey. I do not like ice in my whiskey, despite the name of the show. The show is called MMA on the Rocks because MMA Neat would be a stupid name for a show. but I don't drink whiskey with ice in it because it waters the whiskey down and it ruins the taste of it. So here's what I do in the summertime here in Florida, folks. I buy a bag of frozen cherries that I keep in my freezer, and I throw a handful of frozen cherries in my rocks glass. It chills the whiskey, and it brings out the cherry flavor that I really enjoy in whiskey. This works especially well with whiskeys that have that cherry forward flavor. So your Old Foresters, your Elijah Craigs. I was drinking a Heaven Hill bottle and bond with these frozen cherries tonight. Maker's Mark is great with this as well. So it kind of drinks like an old fashioned without all the sugar and garbage in there, whatever else they put in an old fashioned at your local Applebee's. I don't even know what they're putting in there. Probably some pre-mixed stuff, processed sugars and all that stuff. So frozen cherries, rocks glass, whiskey. It's all you need in the summertime. That's the best advice I can give you guys. If you get nothing else out of this show, take that. Frozen peaches work well too. That'll chill your drink, and it'll add a nice little extra flavor. You guys are having a ball in the comments. I'm gonna have to go back and read over this when the show is done, because I don't want to sit here and sound like Mike Perry trying to read while I'm doing a show. Somebody sent me a video of Mike Perry reading, and it was one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time. Let's see. Let's take a look towards next week. Let's look into the future, shall we? So back in London next week is the UFC. I'm going to have a lot of family in town, but I'm going to make sure I watch this card. So my wife's family is going to be in town. Her brother's flying in from Japan. Her sister and her family are flying in from Switzerland. Four nieces and nephews will be here. And randomly, my parents also decided to come this coming weekend. My dad and I are going to see Leonard Skinner and ZZ Top at the Florida Amphitheater in Tampa, or what's left of Leonard Skinner and ZZ Top. Because ZZ Top, I believe the bass player passed away. I don't think it's the original drummer. It's just Billy Gibbons. And then Leonard Skinner, I think, has like one original member. So what's left of those two bands, we're going to go see them. But my dad and I, that's our thing. We go to concerts. So it's going to be a good time. Those were like two bands on his bucket list. They happen to be playing at the same time. So he texted me. He's like, "Hey, I bought tickets. We're coming down." And I was like, "Great." And then I looked at my calendar. And I realized the wife's whole family is going to be in town, but whatever. We're going to have a good time. We'll have everybody over the house, have a big barbecue. But I'm going to catch these fights. How many ZZ Top beards are left? That's the real question. I think just one. It's just the one. Just Billy Gibbons. Unless it's fake. Unless he's got a beard implant now. Which, who knows in this day and age. By the way, the best part about this frozen cherry trick is eating the cherries at the end that have been soaking in bourbon for as long as you've been sipping on it. It's good. I wouldn't lie to you guys. All right. So, London, UFC Fight Night 224. Tom Aspinall coming back after suffering that horrific knee injury that made me cringe more than the broken arm from Nunez last night. Getting back in there, main event against Marcin Tybura. Now, if this fight were happening like before the Curtis Blaydes fight with Tom Aspinall, before the injury, I would think Tom Aspinall would absolutely dominate this fight. The question is going to be, how does he recover from this knee injury? Mentally and physically, how's he going to look? I'm sure he's doing all the right things. Tom seems like he's got a really good head on his shoulders. This ad is driving me crazy on the side here. I love you, Jamal Hill, but I don't want to see your face right now flashing in an ad. I got to make this screen larger. It's distracting. We got to talk about Jamal Hill, too. Don't let me forget. So how is he going to be in there? You know, is he going to be tentative? You know, is Tabora going to attack the leg? Does Tom feel 100% confident standing on that leg and fighting, grappling with that leg? I think, yes, I think he's going to be fine. But I don't know for sure. You know, Tabora is a tough dude. Here's a guy you can't really count out. I think Tom Aspinall, with the momentum he had before he got injured, would have an easy time with Marcin Tabora. Tabora, back-to-back wins, decision wins over Alexander Romanov and Blagoy Ivanov. Before that, he lost to Alexander Volkov. He was fighting all the odds before this. and that loss to Volkov was his only loss since 2019. Man, I don't know. I have a funny feeling Tom Aspinall might get upset in front of the hometown crowd. You know, I believe it was in front of this crowd that he got injured last time. Tabora is a tough out, man. I don't know what the odds are on this one. I'm not an odds guy. I'm not a gambling guy. But if Tabora is a huge underdog here, I might consider throwing a couple of bucks on this one. I just might. I'm not a betting man. Drinking is my vice, guys. If you want to talk to a gambler, go talk to Dan Tom. Go talk to Brian Petrie, one of those guys. They'll tell you all about. I don't even know what the fuck chalk means, except the stuff like teachers write with. So there's that. Then we got Molly McCann and Julia Stolyarenko in the co-main event. I'm not sure why. Nathaniel Wood and Andre Feely. Now, this is a good fight. I like that. And I really like this middleweight fight, Paul Craig and Andre Muniz. Muniz, great wrestling, really strong dude. But he's not going to want to go to the ground with Paul Craig, I believe. Paul Craig is one of the only big guys that'll submit you off of his back. You know, from middleweight up, you know, name me five people that can submit you that or are even dangerous off their back. I don't know of any. Maybe Tom Aspinall. I don't know. I don't know of any. Rodolfo Vieira, maybe. But he's an old school jiu-jitsu guy. He's like a top pressure guy. Okay, so Sound of Violence letting me know that Tabora is a plus 250. I actually thought he would have been a bigger underdog than that. But that makes sense. Even at plus 250, that's worth throwing a few bucks on him. I would bet on him by decision. I don't think he finishes Tom Aspinall, though. Joey says, take Tom by sub in round two. I don't know, man. Tabora's a tough dude to finish. All right, so I'm looking forward to Paul Craig and Andre Muniz. No surprise that Jai Herbert is on this fight. It seems like he just waits to fight every time they're in London. So there he is. Lerone Murphy and Josh Koulibaly, that's a fun fight too. Davy Grant, always fun to watch, and Daniel Marcos. I'm not giving you guys a whole lot of analysis here. I'm just talking about what I think looks fun. Mark DeCasey is fun to watch. Danny Roberts and Johnny Parsons. Okay, they're burying Brian Barberina on the undercard here for some reason against Mahmoud Muradov. Who doesn't want to see a Brian Barberina fight? Like, I know Let's see. Let me pull him up real quick because now I'm curious. Okay, two losses in a row, but still, his last win was over the newly minted Hall of Fame Robbie Lawler. Like, keep this guy on the main card. This guy's never in a boring fight. All right, he got submitted in his last two fights. Who cares? What's he doing on the undercard? Oh, and apparently Caitlin Vieira is fighting. When I just said earlier that she should fight Myra Bueno Silva. So Caitlin Vieira, who is the highest ranked bantamweight behind the two fighting for the belt, she's fighting on the undercard. This makes no sense to me. Like, are they just going to get rid of the women's bantamweight division too? So I already told you guys, look, magically, the women's featherweight division has disappeared from the UFC's ranking websites. Who could have predicted that? Now you have Caitlin Vieira, who is number four, fighting number six, Pani Kianzad. And this is on the prelims. I didn't even know this fight was happening. This is on the prelims of a fight night. What are you guys doing, man? You got to build up the women. And I don't know who any of these other people are. So, let's see. Yes, Caitlin versus Pani is a great matchup. I don't understand. This should be for, like, the winner of this should be fighting the winner of Raquel Pennington and Juliana Pena. If that fight's happening, I don't think that was even announced. All right. We're going to have to wrap this up quick because I just accidentally ate the last three bourbon cherries all at once. But I want to talk about Jamal Hill really quick. So Jamal Hill ruptured Achilles. This is terrible, man. This is terrible. He vacated the title. He did the right thing. He said, you know, you guys go for it. So Jiří Prochazka and Jiří Prochazka and somebody are going to fight for the title because Alex Pereira is fighting Jan Blachowicz, right? All right. So in any case, Jamal Hill had to vacate his title, ruptured his Achilles. This is a terrible injury. From my understanding, it is better to completely tear the Achilles than it is to rupture it. For some reason, fusing it back together is a shorter recovery time than it being ruptured and having to be repaired that way. I don't know why I know that. I don't know where this information comes from. I know that my dad ruptured his Achilles tendon. I think he was... I want to say he was 40, something like that. And it was a pretty horrible experience for him. We were playing flag football. We were actually somewhere in Queens. And it was like these guys that did like a flag football game every year. It was like a tradition. And one of the guys who organized it was my mom's boss. I know this is a convoluted story. So we wound up playing this flag football game and we had to break onto this field, this turf field. It was like a college field or something where we had to climb a fence and then like scale a wall down to the field. And we were playing this game. My dad ruptures his Achilles tendon, which sucks. But then my dad, the savage that he is, gets up and hops over to the wall, climbs the fence with one leg. We get home. He has to go to the hospital, obviously. But before he does, he goes upstairs and he's standing on one leg, like clipping his toenails. I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? We gotta go to the hospital. He's like, no, I gotta take care of this first. He goes and showers, standing on one leg, clipping his toenails. He's got to be like presentable before he goes to the emergency room. But in any case, It was a memorable thing, but it took him a long time to bounce back from that. My dad, who was always like a great athlete, his whole life, this can be a devastating thing. Now, I know he wasn't the level of athlete that Jamal Hill is, but hopefully he's able to recover quickly. Like, I know Jamal is one of those guys who likes to blow up in between fight camps. You know, he likes to enjoy some food and do whatever and get a little out of shape, and it fine. It works for him. I just hope, you know, he's able to kind of stay disciplined while he's on the sideline healing up. I know for me personally, when I had to have knee surgery when I was 20 years old, I had the back of my kneecap broke and it tore my ACL, my MCL, and one of the other CLs that's in there. And it was like a year and a half recovery for me. And I got like depressed. I gained a bunch of weight. It was horrible. So I hope that Jamal Hill is able to get himself in a good mental place to recover for this and, you know, keep the diet in order and do the rehab and all the things he needs to do to get back. Cause, man, that's fallen a long way. Go from UFC champ to, you know, learn how to walk again, basically. So thoughts are with Jamal Hill. All right. I think that's it. I've been posting more content on social media. Let me know what you guys think about that. I always appreciate honest feedback. Like if you tell me, like if you watched it and you tell me you don't like it, great. Tell me why. What can I fix about it? And I'll listen. Like I know I'm not the social media guy. That's never been my thing. I'm the drink whiskey and talk about fighting guy, because I have a lot of fight experience and I have a lot of probably even more whiskey experience. But you know, trying to be more active on social media because I think that's what we're supposed to do. So I posted a video today. It was a margarita recipe. Let me know what you think. Give me some feedback. Leave some comments on it. It helps the algorithm. You guys are helping the algorithm on the live show today. Sound of Violence and Mark. I'm going to have to go back and read this whole conversation that went on in the comments here. But I appreciate you guys being here for the live show. It's great to hear from you all. If you want to grab some MMA on the Rocks merchandise, that is through our friends at Team Reaper. Reaper1.co is the website. If you want to grab an over-the-top, under-the-influence t-shirt, tank top, or hoodie. I mean, I know the hoodies aren't going to sell right now, but you may be a tank top. Wear it to the beach. promo code MMARocks10 will work on the entire website, whether you're purchasing my merchandise or not. And that's it. That's all I got for this week. So until next time, cheers, everybody. Goodbye.